can't really hurt what Jeremy says because I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugging my ear.
It's the 23rd edition of the Can't Hear What Jeremy Says podcast with Avalanche insider Adrian Dater. And in this edition, it's a grab bag of various topics he and Reagan Smith talk about. From the 24-team playoff format to our weird quirks in jersey collections to discussions on how we'd set the playoff lineups. All that and more coming up. But first, here's your host, Adrian Dater.
Reagan, you know, it's been a weird couple weeks for me. I got to be honest with you. I've been out of the loop a little bit. Probably missed the podcast last week, somewhat because of this. I've had some back problems. Here we go. I'm gonna tell some, you know, old man back stories again. But essentially, I was sort of waylaid for a few days where I couldn't move very well, and I just couldn't do much. I had a back seizure, and I had, you know, another follow-up visit to a doctor who said, you're going to have to either do Pilates and do it the natural way, or your last resort is a fusion surgery. It's going to have about a 70% chance of working. If it doesn't work, it could be the 30%. If that goes wrong, A, your pain now won't improve, and B, your pain in the future could get a lot worse because of this fusion surgery. So we are we're facing kind of a Faustian bargain here, as they say, Reagan.
Yeah.
Are you aware of that term? What that means?
No, but I think contextually I can grasp the meaning of it.
Okay, what would you think it would be?
Oh, God. Something along the lines of it's a bargain that probably will pay off, but has a decent enough chance to where it could end up being worse for you rather than better. Am I close?
You're a little bit close, but not too close. I would say you're about 25% close to 100.
Faustian is, that's...
Faustian.
Deal with the devil, right? Is this such a deal with the devil? Ah,
so where did that come? You didn't just Google that, did you?
Of course not. No, of course not. Absolutely.
Of course you did. Yes, it means a deal with the devil. It means you can't you can't win, you can't lose. You cannot win either way. It's a deal with the devil. It's a no-win situation.
Right.
You know, heads I win, tails you lose. It's it's like a deal you have to make to survive, basically, and give up all your morals and whatever else the devil wants on the other side of the bargain. So.
Anything, if it wasn't your own body, 70% sounds like a great thing. When it's you and pain and livelihood, 70% all of a sudden doesn't look all that great.
I'll tell you what, I'll still roll with those odds. I mean, hell, you know. I mean, I'm a numbers guy, you know. I mean, I'm 55 now. If I get the surgery and it's great, you know, great, all right, I'm still going to live 20, 25 years. If I don't get the surgery, all right, it's going to be a lot of pain. I'll still probably live another 20 years either way. But that's going to be it. So, you know, only got 20 to worry about as opposed to, you know, 70 like I used to think I had. That's when I used to be a lot more of a worrisome person when I was younger as opposed to older, which is weird. I think I can say it's true. The older you get, the little bit less you worry about as long as your basic needs are met. And
part of the acceptance of aging. It happens.
Yeah. Well, I think what it is you know, when I was, you know, 15, even like 12 years old, I used to worry a lot about what I was going to do for a living. Like,
right.
What am I going to do? I was an only child, so I had a lot of imagination and time to talk with adults. So, I was exposed to I would call them philosophical people. You might call them potheads in other areas. But, as a kid growing up on a hippie commune in Vermont, you know, I saw a lot of this kind of thing. And even as a young kid living on a commune, I was just like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do in a capitalist society where I'm supposed to be out on my own earning a living in a few years? You know, I was 12. I'm like, shit, 6 years. You know, I didn't know about, I forgot about college. It's really 10 more years if you go to college, which I was fortunate to do. But the whole time I was sitting worried that, like hell what I was going to do. Or if I was going to die young or something like that. Now I'm like, all right, I accomplished a lot of life's professional goals in a way. And happy with that, and you know, now I'm over the hump in a sense. I don't have to sit and worry about proving myself all the time anymore. Does
Right.
that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does.
Yeah. All right, so that's our little preamble into the hockey podcast that we normally do here. Can't hear what Jeremy says. The Avalanche podcast. I know you either love us or hate us, but you don't ignore us. Reagan Smith back from a couple of weeks hiatus for a couple, both of us in a long roundabout fashion. Apologize for missing the podcast last week. A lot of back problems, but things are looking up, I think. I've really cut down on my steroid intake from the last 7 months, and almost down to zero, and I'm not experiencing the pain I had before the steroids. So that's a really encouraging thing to me. I'm hoping I can avoid any surgery at all now, and that would be the best option. Reagan, we talk hockey, we talk Avalanche. The Avalanche basically got a first-round bye this week. In the proposed 2014 playoff, they're guaranteed a top-four seed and maybe a first-round bye where they you know, they have just have an easier time to the cup. Now, that's potentially what they had anyway with a second-place finish in the Western Conference, but didn't it give you a little bit of a giddy up in your step when it was like the Avalanche are a top seed and, you know, we're on the top here, baby, and you guys, other little peasants underneath us, have to fight your way to play us. You know, it felt good in a way for an Avalanche fan this week.
Absolutely, and one thing, the biggest worry I had was, like, I think we all kind of assumed a 2014 playoff was most likely to happen. The one thing I was worried about was, like, with these top four seeds, like, how are they going to be ready when they won't be able to get that first round? I did like the idea of saying you're guaranteed a top four seed doesn't mean you're going to get the actual seed you have. I like the idea of the top four playing for a position.
Yeah, I do too. I think this whole thing got it right. I thought, you know, they create suspense on both levels. The bottom eight and the top, you know, top four, and so you know, fight it out for positioning either way. I think that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and especially with, like, the Avs, because, like, you felt, like, you had this feeling that the Avs are really starting to gel, even with their injuries, were starting to get hot at a really, really good time, and I honestly think that they would have finished above the Blues in the division. So I'm happy to see this opportunity to go toe-to-toe with the Blues, and even Dallas and Vegas, you know, your other two competitors, that would probably give you the hardest run for the Cup anyways.
Yeah, I can't believe it's, you know, actually maybe going to happen. I'm still sort of wrapping my head around the fact that it actually could happen and still, you know, envisioning how this is going to look. I mean, hockey with no fans in the stands. I mean, I know we do know a little bit about that in this world, having watched Florida Panther home games. But this is going to be so weird. I can't still imagine it happening in a sense, but I kind of want to see it happen now. Either way, like, just let's see how weird it really can get.
Right. And,
you know, we'll never forget it in a sense. All right, let's do it.
Even with the format, like, what was it? It was Tampa and Carolina that were the two.
Well, that's what I read.
Against it.
I don't know if that's official, but somebody reported that. So who am I to doubt the hockey internet press?
But, like,
that could make sense.
Like, with just how screwed up this entire year is, I feel like with what you had to work with, I feel like this is almost probably the best that you could absolutely come up with. 24 may seem like a lot, but, like, your top four teams get guaranteed protection. But the only teams that, I guess, have any right to be worried is probably, what, your wild card teams? That's really about it.
Right, and who said we need to worry about wild card teams and what their, you know, security in life feels like? I mean, you're a wild card team. Shut up and just be glad you're in.
Yeah.
I think it was a perfect format. I think they did it right. I don't understand some of the carping in the media and some of the players about this. You know, nothing was going to be perfect, as we all know. But I think this is as fair as you can get. You've got the top four teams that do have security. And you know, you were always going to have to face a lot of risk no matter what playoff series you played. So,
right.
You know, don't give us this thing about, oh, we deserve to, you know, get even more than we're getting. You know, you had the regular season end when all of you could have lost your position. So,
yep.
So don't get too high and mighty here. And let's just see who can win a real tournament, you know. May the best team win.
The one thing that I did come to question, not that I think teams would do it, but I was thinking, like, you already know what the brackets are for the rest of the seedings besides the top four.
Yeah.
If you're one of those top four teams, do you maybe try to seed yourself into a different position just because you like a potential matchup depending on the two that play each other?
Yeah.
But even then, when we watch March Madness, we know how that goes, and just with everyone being so rusty,
oh, yeah.
I don't think it'll have too much of an effect. But that is a worry that does come to mind.
Anybody carping about fairness or legislative the rules of Queensbury or something like that. No, you know.
Everything's so minute that
just
what you got is about as good as no matter what.
We were tasked with the, you know, task of making, you know, chicken salad out of chicken shit. So.
Right.
You know, stop whining and just be glad you're on skates playing a game and getting paid again, guys, all right? So shut up.
Yeah. You're earning the rest of your paycheck now, which was in question for a bit, so.
Well.
Yeah.
I can put on the hat on the other side, too. Oh, screw you. I'm not going to just come back to satisfy your need to play and your fans, stupid fans. I'm putting my life at risk going out there playing with 20 sweaty guys. I'm exposed to gatherings here, you know, and screw you. You know, I'm just a person like anyone else. I don't need to come back for some fat owner's wallet, you know. So,
No, I get that too.
But, you know, I think most players would play and just want to do what they want to play hockey, but also, you know, they're going to think it's okay, and they're going to take more of a risk, I think, than a lot of people. But just beyond that, I think they just want to do what they do. And I think the numbers that we've all looked at as far as rates of, you know, serious illness and all that, and age groups and stuff, I think there'd be enough players, and already are, that say, you know what, I'm being asked to do this, and B, I'm going to say, all right, the numbers look pretty positive in my favor no matter what, so
right.
So I think I'm going to say yes. So, you know, it's, again, though, we still don't have the locations for this. We don't have dates and times and anything.
There's an agreement, literally, that's it.
Yeah.
I guess that's definitely a start, and no matter if you're a hockey fan, that should be ecstatic about, but there's so much logistical things to be sorted out here before we can even talk.
I know. I read that there's just like a bazillion little things that you'd never think of that everybody has to spend their days planning in advance of, everything to players, fans, media. Anybody getting into the arena, you know, temperature checks and
right.
Oh my God, you know,
it
sounds
it
like really sense. Like I wouldn't want to go to a game based on all this stuff I'm gonna have to do just to get through the damn door. I'll just sit and watch it on TV like I've learned to read love to do again in this pandemic. I was a kid who in the 70s as an only child who grew up watching TV every single day, all day long in the 80s. Kind of got out of it for a long time after that. I thought TV was stupid again. But when I'm forced to do absolutely nothing, it's like, it's my friend again. It is my friend, the TV. You know, I don't care if it's a 35-year-old episode of Gunsmoke or Ironsides or Love Boat. Like, oh, I'm like, damn, this will fill another hour. Get me through the day. And I forgot how mindlessly, numbingly, you know, fun in a way it could be to watch TV all day long, you know?
Oh, we recently cut the cord at our house, right?
Oh, really?
And my parents have never been binge watchers, and now it's just, they're
binge
watching
really?
Everything in imaginable. And I'm like, I've been telling you guys for years how easy it is to get into Hulu and Netflix and all that stuff. Never believed me.
Yeah.
And now it's what they do when they're at home. And granted, my mother's going back to work on Tuesday, but like, they're seeing the new world. I guess they're catching up with the technology and the times.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's interesting to see people adjusting to, I guess, the new normal, which hopefully will be the new normal only for a bit longer.
Yeah, I think we're gonna get a vaccine in like 6 to 8 months. It feels like, you know, I'm not a big scholar on science, but I read enough to know that seems like a lot of people are optimistic that we'll get a vaccine made by then. The question that takes time, I guess more time than I realize, and the problem is, you know, just manufacturing, you know, up to, like, let's say 12 billion doses of it. You know, I think that's the population of the planet, right? You know, if you want to immunize absolutely everybody, okay, good luck. Manufacture 12 billion doses. Ball it up in little perfect little glass cylinders that have to be sterile and perfect and not disturbed, and when they ship, and then you know, it's like, you know, okay,
how do you distribute that in a timely manner?
How do you get it? You know, you can't get it to the people in time. It takes months to do that, and
you know, whoever country develops it, that country is going to be get it first before they send it out to the rest of the world.
Yep, and they're going to charge up the wazooka to get it, which is why if you read the enough of, you know, I'm still a news junkie, so I read a ton of newspaper sites every day, right? So you know, you read up on this race for the vaccine, and it's like a great Tom Clancy novel as far as what I read right now, like the absolute race to win this war, to win the vaccine race, not only to make yourselves $1 trillion personally, but also look like a hero to your country and get the Medal of Freedom.
Exactly.
And be just a lion, have a statue out in front of your country forever. This person invented the virus to the corona, the vaccine to the coronavirus. And, you know, here he is. He's part of, you know, he's a statue Hall of Fame guy for your community here. I think there'll be something, you know. Remember Steve Jobs challenged his Apple team to build, like, this space-age phone that could do everything that it does in, like, 2 years, when they thought all his team members thought it would take 8 to 10 years? And he's like, no, I need it in 1 or 2 years. And he just bent their will to do this.
Yeah.
And they did it. You know, they did the impossible. When the iPhone came out, it was so different. You know, it was so many years ahead of its time, and yet, you know, they only had been given a deadline of like 2 years to get it done, when everybody said, you know, like 10. You know, he's just like, nope, you can do it. And if you push yourself to that's what I think is going on with the pandemic vaccine, you know. It's the new version of Steve Jobs lording over the Mac team.
Everybody wants that cure.
And you know, they get all the glory and the money, so.
Until then, we at least have the return of sports, slowly but surely.
Yeah, so let's talk a little more of that in the second segment. Take a break right here. Hear from our fine sponsor, Total Beverage. Let's get into more of the life ahead in the terms of actually having a vision of sports being back. Let's do that right after this message.
Okay, so you're cooped up at home. You're under mandatory orders of social distancing. You can't go out. You're stuck at home. You're watching Netflix on end. You've watched seasons 1 through 8 of The Love Boat already. You need something to help enjoy the rest of your day. And sometimes that can be a nice glass of wine. It can be a nice craft beer. It can be several of those. Or it can be any other beverage. So here's what I'm saying to you folks who are all on lockdown right now. Let Total Beverage bring your favorite beverages right to your door by a well-scrubbed driver who will often bring it to you in most metro locations, free delivery. That's right, free delivery, most Denver metro locations. Within 2 hours, by the way, 2 hour free delivery. Now, what am I talking about here? I'm talking about the Total Beverage AD10 promo code that I'm offering you right now as a diehard Colorado Hockey Now podcast listener. The deal is this. go to TotalBev.com. That's TotalBev.com. Throw in the promo code AD10 in the checkout box. It's very easy. It's got a line that says insert promo code here. You're make a purchase of any purchase of $25 or more. That can be wine, spirits, beer, soft drinks, water, anything under the sun. They also have selections of snacks and stuff in there too, believe it or not. You can order some good salamis and cheeses. Order that on the website, totalbev.com. Throw in the promo code AD10 and $10 will be taken off that bill. So let's say you got a $28 order. It's now $18. No delivery fee. Free delivery in most Metro Denver locations. And just pay your sales tax on that. Maybe throw a couple bucks to your driver if you want. A couple singles. We can allow that. And it comes right to your door. So if you don't want to go out, you don't want to feel like a criminal going out of your house, going to the store to get your beverage needs, just have Total Beverage do it. They'll bring it right to your door. Simple, easy, convenient. Use the promo code AD10 and save right now. It's the best liquor stores and beverage stores in all of Colorado is Total Beverage. Two locations in Westminster and Thornton, 104th and Washington and Thornton, 92nd and Sheridan area in Westminster. Huge football fields full of beverages waiting to be driven right to your door. So take advantage of this deal, folks. This is a real legitimate deal. You're going to help out the podcast, the website. You're going to, with your patronage of this, this will help keep the lights on here for us if you do this deal. But more important, you're going to save for yourself. And you're also going to be doing the right thing by staying home. So this is a win-win. Take advantage of it right now. Let's get back to the show. All right, second segment. Can't Hear What Jeremy Says podcast. Adrian Dater, I'm your host with the young Reagan Smith, the Arizona State senior-to-be, who is from Colorado. He's here right now with his folks on the pandemic, but soon to be senior at Arizona State, majoring in journalism. And Reagan is, Reagan is just like everybody else, right? We're hockey fans. We always knew we loved hockey, but, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right, Reagan?
Right.
It's like, I've just, you know, I put out a tweet, I think, like 2 weeks ago saying, I miss hockey. I got like 1,000 likes. It was one all-time high for me, probably. And I'm like,
see,
but I was honest, I'm like, God, I miss it.
My thing to get me through has been buying memorabilia, which is a big no-no.
You definitely have an addiction to that. Yeah,
dude,
you've got the bug. Yep, I know.
And now I'm getting into the game, like, issue jerseys, which are so much more expensive, but they're so much nicer.
Yeah, you're a jersey guy. I have a similar affliction, but, yeah, a little in between that and trading cards. But
my father used to collect. We have thousands of cards, baseball cards from the 70s and 80s.
So did I. So did I. And then my mom threw them out. Oh, it's such a classic story. I actually
had my dad wants to sell them because I think he could earn some money.
It's the classic story of me. I was the ultimate card nerd from 1971 on to like 85. So I had everything. And neatly stacked, stored. Dozens of Mike Schmidt rookie cards, you name it. Went to college, come back one semester, find out my cards are gone. And my mom said that the cat peed on them, number one. And that gave her license to toss out my entire collection.
Yes.
That I was not happy with mom there, and, you know, I've learned to accept it. You know, I love my mom.
it is what it is.
I had a t-shirt for a while that I used to wear, so, you know, once I was a millionaire. But then my mom threw my baseball cards away. I'll tell you what, though. You didn't have as much money in hand in your cards as you think you did. I'll just say this to every 50-something guy right now or older who thinks they lost a fortune when their mom threw their cards away. I actually did a story on this for the Denver Post about, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe more. I don't know. When I went to Bill's Sports Collectibles store in Denver, the iconic sports memorabilia place out on Broadway in downtown Denver. Just a great store. It has everything memorabilia wise. But I think my jersey collection was just old guys who played for different teams at the end of their career that were great players. Like
Yeah, you like the weird
I like
jerseys.
the Joe Namath Rams jersey. I have that one. I have Pete Maravich with the Celtics. I have that jersey. Just great players who finished up with a weird last team. And the more disastrous that final year, the more I like them. Like Johnny Unitas with the Chargers in 1974, 73, excuse me. Like I obsess about every single thing about that season with the Chargers. Like I have a definite fetish for the 1973 San Diego Chargers, where I just obsessed by all things with them because of the ultimate great player who finished up with such a weird team. Like it's almost unbelievable to me. Like
Yeah.
Johnny Unitas playing with the San Diego Chargers.
What's with that fake Unitas jersey you got there, Orbison?
No, I don't have an actual jersey. I was gonna get that jersey, but they haven't actually manufactured it yet. So I think I misspoke when I said I actually had it, but I meant to say I'm going to have it.
Still though, it's such an unbelievable jersey. It's just like, would anyone actually believe that was real? And the answer is probably not, unless they knew
That's
their
right.
football history.
That's the thrill I get out of wearing those in a
Yeah.
way. But no, I, you know, Johnny Unitas that last year was such a disaster, but and yet, it was Johnny Unitas though. That's the thing. Like,
Yeah.
he was the guy in the
Baltimore
muddy
Colts
cleats in the
legend.
50s, like black and white TV, just
Right.
an ultimate legend. And then he's wearing these funky Dalek, crazy early 70s Charger uniforms, and I just love it. I just love it. I'm addicted to that. I could name 500 guys. I actually have an ambition and a desire and a plan for maybe the last 10 years, but I haven't actually done it yet, which is write a book about that. Like, just go to try to find as many weird, great players who played for a strange last team as I can and just talk about that last year. And that's all. I don't want to hear about the glory years where you played. I want to hear about that last year. I want to hear about Franco Harris with the 1978 Seattle Seahawks, after
All
winning four Super Bowls with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
the players that went out with a whimper rather than a
Just
bang.
no, just doesn't always have to be a whimper, but just crazy weird last team. That's all. I like it if they have a great year. I mean, Dave Kingman, guy who sort of fit into my club, was hit like 36 homers his last year, before he just kind of quit at age 36. And yet, he was such a weird veteran on the last team, like the Oakland A's, that I lost after a Dave Kingman A's jersey. But there's a lot of numbers that were taken by better players. That's why there's no Unitas Chargers jersey. He had number 19, but there's like a Hall of Fame play receiver who wore number 19 for the Chargers, Lance Allworth. So, and I don't think anybody, there's probably some licensing thing as to why they can't make either or jersey. I don't know. So I bet it's something like that though.
If you could ever find a blank jersey, you could probably get it customized for it if you wanted
Yeah, but
to.
you don't want to. I don't want to. I guess I could probably do a customized Unitas jerseys.
I'm sure you go to any major stitching place for uniforms and
Of
stuff.
course you could,
You
but
send them it, but
yeah, I'd want it to be the actual thing though. I mean,
yeah, see,
I would love to.
that's
I would just. Oh, I would kill for a Unitas game-worn Chargers jersey. Like that would be.
right.
I would
So
spend
cool.
so many thousands of dollars if I was a rich guy. I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna go up to like, I don't know, I'll go up to like, let's say I've got like $5 million in the bank, and free and clear on a Unitas game-worn jersey, Chargers. Oh hell, I'd go up to like, go to like 200K.
Oh, big
I mean,
spender.
if it was came down to it.
That is true. But yeah, it's such a rare jersey.
I would say that's all right. That's like 0.5% of my wealth, but I'm just gonna do it. You know, I want that jersey. I want that goddamn jersey. You know, the Avalanche's greatest player in that regard, would you say, is either a toss-up between Dave Andrechuk and Jari Kurri? Even though
Andrechuk
can't win, because he actually won the Stanley Cup after he left the Avs, so his career got better. But he was such a weird-looking guy in that Lightning jersey, I remember.
I always thought Jerome Iginla was so weird to see on the Avalanche.
Yeah,
and he
for
stayed
sure.
for a decent amount of time. Yeah,
for sure. He wasn't the final. That wasn't the final team, though. He had the weird, like, last 9 games with the Los Angeles Kings.
That's true.
So yep. That's his true washed-up jersey that I'd actually really want more than the Avs or Flames jersey. In fact, I may really want that jersey in the future. I think number 12 on the Kings with a Iginla on it would be so weird. Like, what? A Iginla played for the Kings? Whoa, really?
2017. 2017 trade deadline. I remember that.
Yeah, basically given away to the Kings for like no penalty, no compensation almost at all.
Did he wear 88 or was it 12 still?
Oh, did he wear 88? You're right. Did he go back to that for some reason? Was that Jarrett Stoll's number? Yeah, I think it might be.
Because I think it was already taken.
Yeah, and I think. Wasn't Stoll a captain for a little bit? Or am I thinking of like Kopitar instead or Brown? I don't know. I thought he may have been a captain.
Hold on. Kopitar is 11. He was captain that year.
Right.
But
what about number 12? Was that Jarrett Stoll?
I'm actually not even. Yeah, it was Marion Gabrick?
Oh, 1 year. Was it okay? So was it Stoll another year or whatever? Who cares? Anyway, we've certainly gotten off to a. We said we're going to talk about the Avs roster in the second segment. We talked about jerseys the whole time. It's our podcast, so goddamn it, we can do what we want. But
I could go on for hours about jerseys.
I could too.
I'm too into it.
I could go on for hours about old players who finished up with a weird team. Like, I'm endlessly fascinated by that. I could just go on for hours and hours, which is why I really should write a book about it. I tend to be a guilty type where I always feel like I did something wrong, so I'm getting to that point with this book. I feel like I need to try and do it, and I should have done it already in this pandemic.
Now, I would say you have the time to do it.
I know.
See if it sticks.
I need to kick myself in the ass here. I think I'm gonna try and do it. I'm still not. Something tells me I'm gonna whip out and just never do it. But I still think I'm gonna give it a try. I don't care how many copies it would sell either. If it sells 2 copies. To me and my dog, I don't.
It's a soul book for you, though.
I'm just glad I did it. Just glad to be able to. If I ever get to talk to, Bobby Orr to talk about his last playing with the Blackhawks his last year, you know, boy, what an experience that would be. So I wouldn't even care if I get a single dollar from it, but I hope that somebody would buy it. All right, Reagan, Let's take our second break here and come back. We're going to talk nothing but Avalanche roster speculation on segment number 3, folks. So just hang in with us a little bit here. Hear from my next sponsor. And now we're talking Avs roster here in the final segment. Let's do it in a couple minutes.
That's the end of the second segment. Now we'll take a break and hear a word from our sponsor, Bender's Bar & Grill.
Hey, folks. Like a lot of businesses out there, Bender's Bar & Grill has been affected by the coronavirus outbreak. They are not open for business right now, but I want to tell everybody here that, you know, when this settles, we get back to normal eventually, I want you all to remember that Bender's Bar and Grill has been working behind the scenes to help as many people as they can. That can be food deliveries to people who need it, all kinds of things in the community they've done. That's why they earned the recently the Best of Westminster best sports bar and grill in the area recently. That was an official award by the city of Westminster given to Bender's. We all know Bender's incredible hockey bar, the best in town. Unfortunately, they are shut down right now, not just because they're a restaurant, but because they're attached to a hockey rink right next door. And that's just the way it goes. They're going to be closed until this thing is, you know, until they're told they can reopen. So Bender's Bar and Grill is my favorite place ever to watch hockey and eat food and have drink and whatnot and carouse with friends who know about hockey. So say a prayer for Bender's, like everybody else in this thing. They are going to weather the storm. They'll be back better than ever when this is over. When they are allowed to open again, I will be there day one, and my first thing to do will be order a double helping of poutine. That's right, a double helping, because I need it. I can't find poutine anywhere in the area otherwise, and Bender's is the only place in the area that served it, as far as I know. So I have to wait for that as well. In these tough times, Bender's is premier destination for all hockey lovers in the area. It is 10701 Westminster Boulevard, right next to the Westin Hotel. You all know it. You all love it. When they come back, when we're all back to business, just save a place in your heart for Bender's. Tell them Adrian sent you. Tell your server the promo code word DATER. And your first beer or soft drink will be taken right off your bill, like always. Say hi to my friend, the proprietor, Jimmy Armstrong. He's weathering the storm just like everybody else. And, you know, we all need to hang in there and just get through this. So save a spot in your heart for Bender's when this is coming back. I know they'll be there. They'll be broadcasting all the hockey games, as always. There'll be hockey out on the rink overlooking the bar. There will be numerous good times to be had still, to be had at Bender. So that's it for now. Just let's get through this, and let's get back to the show.
Segment number three, Reagan Smith with me. Can't hear what Jeremy says. The podcast sponsored by Total Beverage and Bender's, both iconic institutions out here in the northern part of town. Reagan, segment number three. We're going to talk some Avs here. This is an entirely healthy roster from what I've heard. Like, no injuries. Even Colin Wilson's going to be back if they need him. It's going to be a... Of all the training camps, I think that might, you know, if they happen soon, to get into the playoffs and be a real team again, it's going to be a real battle to see who wins the top 12 forward spots, especially... Yes. When we come back, and then we'll talk about the goaltending after that. But look at all the depth right now on the forward spot. Who's gonna be your excluded forwards? Let me ask you. You're gonna have to leave off a couple pretty popular players,
right? Oh God. Jose is staying. Sorry, Jose, you're staying. I guess probably you take out Kaut, right?
Yeah, Kaut's not going to make the top.
No. You send out O'Connor. He's back. Kamenev, I don't know. Kamenev's probably someone you definitely send back to, but I'm a fan of Kamenev and what he does when he has his moments. But
about a playoff team here, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's not there.
So so Jost is in your top 12, if I heard you correctly. But
yep.
Yeah, there's no way he's going to be benched. Even though, no. You know, there's going to be some debate about that, and his name's going to be, hey, why is, you know, Tyson Jost? No, he's going to get one of the top 12, you know.
Yep.
But all right, so let's break down even more. Who's your top six forward? Is it going to be Donskoy or essentially Nichushkin? To me, that's the two guys that would draw a pretty heated debate why they should be in the top six either way.
I love Nichushkin, and he's had such a breakout season, but I think you have to put Donskoy inside that top six, right? Because he has that playoff experience, especially.
Yeah.
But it's just Nichushkin, for all we know, and I hope I'm wrong, could be a one-off type of player, but I think you want that consistency that Donskoy has always kind of shown, and although he's had a breakout year as well, it's just Donskoy, I feel like, just fits that top six a bit more than Nichushkin does.
Boy, this is really tough for me when I think about this debate. I just see both sides. Like, I echo everything you said about Donskoy, and yet I go, yeah, 33 points this year in 65 games, that's his raw numbers. You know, it's you're not going to win any fantasy league contests with those numbers, right? But we all think that he had a really good year when he was here, like, playing. Don't forget he was concussed in that final game against the Rangers. Brendan Lemieux concussed him, and Lemieux's going to have a multi-game suspension when he, you know, when the league comes back. He's not going to be able to play for the Rangers because of that. I'll tell you what, though. When I look at the guy, the way he played, and the way he played, and the size and the skill that I've seen in different times, and maybe could be like just the weirdest, greatest wild card payoff starting top six gamble you could ever make, it could be Nichushkin.
Well, I mean,
like, he was so good at times.
And you know? Nichushkin was the go-to number one right winger when basically all of the top line besides Landeskog was out. That was Nichushkin who played that right wing.
Yeah, and he, you know, I mean, even when he, you know, second line, he was good. I mean, even dropped to the third line, he was doing some major damage against opponents as a third line guy. And boy, that's, I don't know. I don't. It's a great problem to have, but I almost think, like, boy, I almost want to gamble on Nichushkin a little bit. I think the payoff could be a little bigger somehow than Donskoy, even though I'd love Donskoy the way he plays.
Nichushkin's a player to where this season it's felt like when he's on, like, it just feels like it just comes in buckets almost. That, like, when he's performing, he's really performing well, even if he's not scoring points.
Yeah.
You just know that he's there and he's playing a really, really solid game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
he's earned his top line time all the injuries.
He totally did. I mean, count me among the people who thought, oh god, this guy. And you know, I could see the talent, but I mean, you're like, all right, dude, you got to put the puck in the net. I mean, it's been like 100 straight games without a goal. You're like, all right, I mean, it's okay, but you know, I got to get some numbers here. And then he just started putting up the numbers, you know, and boom, goal streak. Goal streak? What's that? I mean, he's got 10 goals, whatever he's got. It's been 13, great.
Yeah.
13. I was going to say 13 goals. I knew he had 13. I think it's 13 and 10, right? Does he have 23 points?
13 and 14. 27 total.
Never mind. minus one there. I just loved this game. I thought, boy, this guy is not only skillful, but he's just dangerous in a way. Like, he's a just a guy that could, like, take over a minute of a game maybe with his skill. Yep. You know, he's not going to be the best for 25 minutes probably. But he's, you know, when he gets things going the way he's confident, man, you can just see things, like, happen that he can do that are, you know, just Donskoy can't quite do in some ways, you know. He's, you know, first of all, Nichushkin's a center at heart, I think. I think he plays more like a center, even though he's a winger. I feel like he's just he's really all over the ice when he's at his best. Like, he's tough. I tell you what, I thought he was one of the best players I saw this whole season.
Yeah, he's
in the league. Like, he's a plus 26. He was just like, he was really dominant out there at times. You couldn't do anything on him. He's so big and fast.
The fact that we're arguing that a typical third line winger on this team can easily play top line is just kind of a testament that a healthy Avalanche team is a freaking terrifying Avalanche team.
Yeah, that's when you know you've got a pretty good ongoing near-term future. Defensively, I think we're set with top six no matter what. You know, all the ones that everybody's healthy, Zadorov, Cole, that's your top six.
Yep.
It's a much more interesting debate to, you know, just talk about Avalanche defense for next year. But, you know, we'll save that for the next podcast maybe. But, you know, in essence, you know, I think Timmins is waiting to replace, you know, Zadorov, and you know, Makar is waiting to replace Cole, right? And you know, maybe the odd, you know, then you know, is Eric Johnson, do we want to keep him more than a, you know, one or two more years? Do we want to start trying to trade him next, whatever, after this year?
That's so weird to think about.
Do we want to expose him for the expansion draft? You know.
Yeah. Eric Johnson, such a staple, really, to Colorado as a state, but just the team as a whole. You know, him. Well, and I guess Barry before he left. And it's just weird to think that we're now a year or two away from really thinking about, do we keep him or do we say the Avs have such a good youth development in progress that he's at the back end of it.
Well, you have two guys that should be playing in the top six within 2 years minimum.
2 years, yeah.
And that's Timmins and Byram.
Yep.
And, you know, ideally they come in and replace Big Z, even though I think Big Z is, you know, you got to be careful giving up on a guy like him because I really think he adds value at times to the team. But if tough choices have to be made, he's probably a guy that goes, you know. And Timmins and Byram for probably Cole, you know, after one more year. Yep. That's your future Avalanche defense, along with, you know, Makar and Girard.
A few days ago, I was kind of having this conversation with what kind of who the Avs would be willing to give up through the drafts coming up and season. Would Zadorov a player that you'd probably keep a bit into next season to get his worth up and then maybe think about trading? Because I don't think he makes it to the end of the next trade deadline, if I'm being honest with you.
No, I mean, do we want to invest another one or two more years in Nikita, or do we want to just get rid of him now and then, you know, give the job to Timmins, if assuming he's healthy? I think he is going to be on the way out just because somebody's going to have to go. You know, Timmins has got to play. You know, he can't, you know, but Byram doesn't have to play right away this year necessarily, but, you know, you don't want to keep this kid down in the minors forever in junior hockey. I mean, he, you know, it's time to start sacking up and playing. You know, I don't think a fifth year at the Vancouver Giants would be the best thing for his career. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know, all right. So if he plays for the Eagles, that's fine. You know, maybe play a few games for them. But I think just based on what I see from him, I think he'd be ready to play next year and just get him going. You know, he's gonna be fine. All right, so maybe he's a little raw at the start, but so what? He'll play into it. Reagan, the goalie situation, though.
Yup.
Gonna have to make a tough choice. Back to the Faustian bargain definition.
Yeah.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. This is another argument that I've been having, too. With myself, more so than anything else. It's like, Grubauer's younger by a year, but Francois, has he proven himself to be a starter as a full time?
Yeah, he really hasn't, has he? No.
I don't totally know.
No, he hasn't.
I would still take Grubauer normally, but Grubauer's also had times when it's like, well, Francois has looked a lot better. But that's
right.
Yeah, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I don't think if you're the Avs, I don't think I really care. Or if I'm me, let me rephrase that. I don't really care if you keep Grubauer versus Francois, which ones they'd pick. Honestly, I'd probably still keep Francois, though.
Well, I think
although I just said I don't think he's proven it, but I think that's who you'd keep.
I think you would, too. I think he signed for two more years after this year.
Yep.
He'll be 32 or 33 by then. I think either way, you know, he's going to be grateful to be with the Avs if he had success to warrant another bigger contract, and I think he'd give the Avs first benefit. And I'm not worried about him leaving so much, but I do think that you have to think about Grubauer really hard because he's the guy who's going to want a 3 or 4 year deal, you know, no matter what, you know, because he's going to be UFA after next year, so he's going into a last year, you know, where if he has a great year, he's going to say, screw you guys, I'm going to go on the free agent market now, and I'm gone for nothing. Or, you know, you're sort of banking on him failing that and just sort of trade him off before that happens and get something for him. And then go with, rumors of Matt Murray coming over from Pittsburgh. You know, people at the hockey site Pittsburgh Hockey Now, they told me their sources on that, the Avalanche interested in Matt Murray. And I was like, really? And it's like,
yeah.
And they told me the names of the sources. I'm like, wow. All right, if they said it. So apparently the Avalanche have had interest in Matt Murray, potentially being Grubauer's replacement.
If you can give up without giving up too much for that exchange, I'm all for it. But if that's a trade, I'd be so worried that you're going to give more than you get.
Yeah. Well, but Matt Murray's only 25.
Yeah.
Grubauer's going to be, I think, 30.
29,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but pretty close he's going to be. I think his birthday's pretty soon, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, he's a year away from 30 almost. Murray's 25. He's won two Stanley Cups. You know, he's got a same kind of contract problem in Pittsburgh where they're worrying about paying him too much long term.
Yeah.
And go with the kid Tristan Jarry instead.
It fits what the Avs have been doing.
Yeah, because they can.
The Avs are just getting younger. No
right. They can. What. They can win the press conference when they always want to look younger and more with it.
Yep.
You know, ahead of the tip of the curve with youth and, you know, hey, we got a guy 5 years younger than Gruby who's won two Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
You know, technically you forget.
Has a resume right behind
you,
it.
You forget though that you were gonna say right. Oh, well, more than Grubauer. No, people forget Grubauer's got a Stanley Cup ring. With the Washington Capitals. Granted, he didn't. I don't think he won a single game in the playoffs that year, but hey.
Ring's a ring.
Ring's a ring. That's more than I got. But yeah, no, you. To me, I mean, I think it was all going to come down to, and still will, really, probably, even though it may be sort of like disjointed and weirder looking, and you can't really. It's like a. You know, Rorschach test as far as artistry goes, you know. But hey, we're going to have to play this thing out and have a Stanley Cup winner, and that's the way it goes. Nothing's going to be fair. But, you know, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, I think the Avs were just, you know, right in the wheelhouse as far as what they can do with this whole. I mean, I think the Avs have good choices either way. I mean, as far as goaltending comes down to it, I think they were going to make their decision probably by giving Grubauer the start. And, you know, unless he screwed up so much in training camp that he somehow just didn't look worthy of it. But I still think that Grubauer is going to have the right of first refusal on the job. Like, he's going to have to play worse. You know, Frantos is really going to have to outplay him to get the job. You know,
like, I'm going to say this year especially.
And they're going to say, all right, this is our final chance also to evaluate Grubauer long term. You know, like if he's the playoff goalie that we actually believe in and thought that's why we got him, and he leads us to the promised land, then we're damn right. You know.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I don't think Grubauer's earned that right of refusal yet. You know, he's done a lot of good things for this organization since he's come here. He was the first goalie to win a playoff series since, I believe, Jose Theodore in 2008.
Yeah, if you're the Avs, and I agree with you there, it's like you have to give the nod to Grubauer just with how much he has done, and just especially last year. I mean, especially the series against the Sharks. I mean, that could have gone away. Could have been over in less than seven had he not made some awesome saves.
Yep.
But it's, yeah, I think long term, I think Francois is probably your guy, but like,
but
if
he's,
now,
he's 30
if you're
though.
Now, it's Grubauer.
Yeah, I mean,
it's only a year difference, though.
I it's a tough debate. You know, I don't, well, Grubauer's pretty average a lot of time this year, even though I think combined, I think him and Francois have the fourth best save percentage combined for the Jennings Trophy.
I'm not going to lie to you. Francois, when he first started, I was like, this is ridiculous. There's no way this man survives as the number two goaltender. Yeah. And then it was like he just got comfortable with the team all of a sudden, which I'm absolutely is a thing, but like, it was like a night and day difference, but yet he still had those moments to where it looked like he was playing in his first few games. And that's where my reservations come from having Francois as a number one. There's times when if he's off, he's pretty off.
Yeah, but it's not that often, is it?
And it's less and less.
He's a very interesting guy. It seems like I've only the one really serious year I've been around him. He's very unflappable. Like, you know, he's got a weird kind of sort of dead-eyed look to him. Like, maybe he's not
business.
Maybe he's very impervious to pressure. Like maybe this guy is just very, very cool on his feet and does not fluster. And you're like, that's how you feel like when you're talking to him, because he just sort of, you ask him a question in kind of a scrum way with everybody crowding around, and you blurt out a question. And he's like, kind of looks at you in the eye and gives it a beat or two, pause, and then he goes into his answer. And you're like, man, kind of impressive kid, you know? I can see him being a real leader somehow.
Yeah.
So
a player people rally around.
Yeah, I mean, or just, you know, just one of those kids who's just, you know, gets a little calmer the bigger the game gets, you know? Maybe it takes time to learn that skill. I don't know. I mean, he is 30. But he had a lot of really good years in the KHL.
Yeah.
Like, he was considered the league's best goalie. So, I mean, that's a pretty good league. Yeah, there's a few bad goals early, but, boy, yeah, not a lot after that. You still have to prove it in the playoffs somehow. You know, it's not fair sometimes who gets the start, but that's still something he has to prove, you know, that at least Grubauer has had, hey, I can say I won a playoff series. You can't, you know. I mean, and that's a real thing. I mean, who knows who, you know, playoffs goaltending is, you know, that's when you really judge a goalie. You know, in you know, they're just quest for glory or whatever. I mean, everybody has a pretty good save percentage. Everybody has a pretty good numbers. But the guys who win the cup are the ones who, you know, just gets somehow to that mental next level, you know.
Yep.
So I did want to again thank our sponsors, Total Beverage and Bender's out in Westminster. Bender's is back doing drive-through or you know, takeout on the curb, but technically both true. But they're back doing that delivery and delivery of their awesome poutine and everything else, and they're going to be back in, I believe, seating, I think, pretty soon, Reagan. I'm an optimist, as you know, so I'm always thinking the vaccine's right around the corner.
Yeah, but, it sounds like June.
Yeah, you know.
When it gets open.
To the readers of the website, thank you for your continued support. You know, we've had a really good first year, and I still have bigger plans for the future, and I want the site to be even better and better and better, and just, you know, just sort of really dominate the space in Avalanche media coverage again. And I think I'm got some ideas that can do that. Just want to again thank everybody for hanging in on the website. All your readers have hung right in there with me and seem like you're in it for the longer haul with me, so thank you so much. I do have a discount for you. If you want to get that discount, DM me on Twitter. I'll give you a secret promo code that'll get you 33% off a full year's coverage on the site. You just have to DM me, tell me you want the secret promo code word, and I will DM it right back to you. So there you go. All right, Reagan, great podcast. Stay safe, kid. We will hopefully talk to you next week when we get a decision on what's going forward, and we'll actually, you know, get into, you know, the next inner ring of debate on how this playoff should unfold and whether it's fair or not and all that stuff. Fair enough?
Hey, wheels are in motion. Let's keep it that way for sure.
All right, man. All right. Thanks, Reagan. Thanks for the listeners. We'll talk to you next week. Can't hear what Jeremy says.
That does it here for us. As always, thanks for listening in, and we'll see you next time. But if you want to stay just a little bit longer, you'll listen in to some behind-the-scenes conversations that didn't make the podcast, including a conversation regarding the changing landscape of who covers NHL teams and why a team has a lot of power over their own coverage. Dater also talks about a 1996 playoffs experience where he traveled via police escort to a Chicago Blackhawks game. And finally, Dater gives me shit. There, I said it. I cussed. For not cussing very much on the podcast and my own reasonings behind it.
It's such a different world, though, media-wise. I can't imagine. I mean, you do not need the teams, like we were saying, they don't need the press like they used to. They don't. Yeah. They have their own press.
Nope.
They have their own websites. They want to dictate every little thing that they... So that's why I really do think maybe in the next 10, 15 years tops, we're going to have teams that just outlaw independent media out permanent.
Yeah.
And everything is an infomercial designed to the... common denominator fan out there, and the common denominator fan is not going to care whether they, you know, get a story from the team or quote unquote Joe Schmo from the independent site. They don't care. They're probably going to want positive propaganda about their team and not care, not want a critical journalist.
Well, when the thing happened with the the Capitals player with what his comments on Instagram and all of that, as talking, they're like, "How come like local Washington journalists haven't said anything?" And I'm just like, "That's because they know that like their spots are never guaranteed, especially coming into the next season. Like, you say something that pisses them off now, all they can say is, 'Yeah, we're gonna give it to another website.' Like, it's in so many ways, teams can control who." Or what's kind of written by who they allow in.
Absolutely. What if you're a billionaire owner of a team, you know, a publicly traded company, do you want an independent media person coming into your product place of business and, you know, digging up potentially damaging things that can only hurt you financially, potentially? Or you could just have no risk of that whatsoever and have nothing but house paid media in your building, and everything's just a great big fun show for the fans, and they don't really care about media anymore? Hell yes, I'd be a boner said, hell, I don't, yeah, out you go. I'm not giving Adrian Dater a credential anymore to go look into some possibly nefarious thing we did, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not taking that risk, out you go.
Sure.
Or, you know, you're like, all right, if you want to cover this team, you got to pay us $1 million a year, you know. Whatever they can make money off it, maybe, you know. And only the, of course, only the very, very richest elite media organizations will be afforded to send anybody, which will only diminish the number of voices all that much more. And I think when you have a less bigger set of voices, you know, and diverse voices, then you're ultimately the loser because you're. You know, you're not getting a wide enough brain input into your product. I remember being in the Avalanche team bus to the 96 playoff series in Chicago against the Blackhawks. And I was riding the bus, even in the playoffs. And we got a police escort all the way from the Drake Hotel in downtown to United Center about... good 8 miles in city traffic. Right. That's a lot in the city. And we had a VIP escort the entire way. Cops just blaring their sirens, and yet everybody pulled over, and the bus just sailed right through. And we got into the arena in no time at all, when it should have taken like 2 hours. And I was like,
nice.
I was like, damn, this is the way to live, man. You know? You don't seem like a guy who... believes in profanity that much, so I don't think I've ever heard you swear. Or is that a religious thing?
I do on occasion. I'm usually more, I kind of view it as like this is more of a professional environment for me.
Yeah.
I'll still do it, but like
okay.
Off air, I'm not afraid to. I would go off.
I mean, I talk more off air than I ever did back. You know, I'm not going to speak F bombs to Gary Bettman, you know what I'm saying? Like in a meeting or anything. But, I mean, if we're out with the guys and stuff, yeah, I'll throw off an F-bomb every other word if I'm in the mood, you know.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I didn't know if you were like a really religious type who never say the F bomb
No,
or anything. Because I don't think
not
it.
At all.
I think we can throw an F bomb out there on our podcast every now and then, shock the listeners. I mean,
Yeah.
You know, look at Barstool Sports, how rich they are. The whole thing is F bombs, and just, you know, frat boy behavior. They're worth a hundred
Yeah.
fucking billion dollars right now.